Part 18, Chapter 5. In the mid-morning twilight of the forest, they caught up with the other flatbed. It was the small beginning of the string of mishaps that were to dog them that day. Running in the dark, the other flatbed had come to a river, one of the many that wandered through this forest on a more or less westerly course. Their own direction of travel had been to the east of south. The driver, possibly overly tired, had not slacked speed. These ground drives could run on water, if it were reasonably smooth, as the sensors under them could sense water as well as ground. A teleportation drive didn't rest the weight of a vehicle on the surface, but held it suspended. But the driver must have hit a bump on the bank and had an unlevel vehicle when he reached the water. And there it sat, nose submerged in the water, disabled. The crew was sitting there now on the flying mine platform, back in under the trees. They had flown it and the mortar off and put themselves in a posture of defense. They were very happy to see Johnny. Crocodiles were all over the riverbank in front of them, and a ring of the beasts were circling around the flying platform. Nobody had dared shoot for fear of pulling the convoy back on them. Johnny made room for the second platform on his own flatbed, and they flew theirs the short distance. The roar of the motors and the bellow and roar of the crocs were deafening, and Johnny was afraid they might be close enough to the convoy tail to attract attention. They left the half-submerged flatbed where it lay, and double-loaded with two platforms and two mortars, they crossed the river and continued their pursuit. Shortly after, the road got better, due possibly to a change of soil. They picked up speed. They had had about a 12 to 15 hour travel gap between the tail and themselves, but a convoy tends to be slower than a single vehicle, particularly in such rough terrain. They were traveling so fast by early afternoon that they did not see that it was getting lighter ahead. Abruptly, they burst out of the forest and onto a wide savanna. 3 miles ahead, there was the convoy tail. With a prayer they had not been seen, they did a U-turn and got back in the trees. Johnny directed them eastward within the thin border of the forest over very rough going. Then they stopped. The savanna before them was covered with grass and some shrub. Here and there, cactus-like plants dotted the wide expanse. Johnny got up in the cab to get a better look. Aha! The defile of the ambush was just ahead of the convoy. The lead tank was entering it now. That ravine seemed to be a cut through the southern shoulder of a range of mountains. Mountains! Up to the northeast, their crowns above the clouds reared two peaks, enormously tall. Was that ice and snow? There was something else strange. Then Johnny had it. It wasn't raining. There was cloud. It was very hot and humid. There was not much sun, but it wasn't raining. The Russians were buzzing, looking at the convoy. It was impressive. Over 50 vehicles, most of them flatbeds, loaded to the last pound with ammunition, fuel, and breathe gas, were crawling along like some enormous black snake. Five tanks. The one in the lead was a Basher, Bash Our Way to Glory, a nearly impregnable armored vehicle. There was another tank in the middle and three tanks at the end. Now that their own motor was off, the roar of that convoy, even at this distance, was like thunder. If the ambush were in place, the ball would open when that whole convoy was in the defile and the mortar up front closed the road in front of them. Johnny turned to the Russian officer he had brought. The man spoke hardly any English at all, but with signs and a little relief map drawn in the dirt, Johnny got across what he wanted him to do. The southern side of the defile ended in a knoll. The right side of the defile was a steep hill, a cliff, in fact. If one of the flying platforms could just get behind that knoll and wait until all those vehicles were in the ravine, it could lob mortar shells into this end of the cliff and start an avalanche that would close the back door. The Russian got it. He and his crew took off in the flying mine platform, flew along inside the border of the trees, and vanished. Johnny watched the convoy intently. It was struggling along into the ravine. This was a set-piece battle, the kind he'd read of in old man books. When the whole convoy got into that defile, the ambush would avalanche the road closed in front of them, and the mortar he'd just sent would close the road behind them. They would have a soaring slope on their right and cliffs on their left. They wouldn't be able to turn around. And one had only to fly over them and tell them to surrender, and it would all be over, just like that. But set-piece battles seldom come off, as they were about to discover. They waited for the convoy to enter fully. There was just a momentary glimpse of the platform they had sent in as it settled into position. Perfect. Now all they had to do was wait for the last tank to enter. The head of the convoy was now out of Johnny's sight. Nearly all the convoy was in the ravine. Then, blam! The ambush mortar let go. Blam, blam, blam! But the last three tanks were not yet in the gap. Johnny dove for the console of the flying platform. His four-man crew scrambled up to hold on. The flying platform soared into the air, Johnny's fingers dancing on its rudimentary keyboard. He took it up 1,000 feet, south of the road and near the forest edge. He could see the head of the convoy now. A roaring avalanche was falling across the road in front of the Basher tank. He could see some Russians in a reserve group back of the ambush point. He spotted three Russians along the crest to the convoy's right, hundreds of feet above the vehicles. The Basher sought to climb the roadblock. Its guns would not elevate high enough. It backed and then charged the dust-geysering rock pile. The tank's nose lifted and it began to fire. Blast after blast arced up from the tank. It must be firing explosive shells. They soared in a glowing curve up and dropped in the area where the ambush command post must be. But the mortar up there was still firing down. The last three tanks in the convoy were backing up. There was no way this end could be sealed. Johnny took the flying platform halfway between the convoy tail and the woods. The end tanks were now turning around. Let loose on this savanna, they would be very hard to handle, even with planes. Yes, they were also Bashers. No, a plane couldn't handle them. At the head of the convoy, the tank charged the rock barrier again, probably to elevate its gun muzzles. The tank in the center of the convoy was firing toward the ambush point, but could not fire up the steep slope to the crest. Johnny yelled to the Scot,
"Start felling trees across their road!"
The Scot got it and angled the mortar around. The Russians, holding on to the thin, tilting platform, began to drop mortar shells into the stubby barrel. They landed a shell beside a giant tree near the road back into the forest, and it began to topple. Mortar blast after mortar blast flashed at the forest edge. Trees began to fall amid towering columns of dust. Johnny was sighting the mortar in by tilting the platform. The three tanks saw the road back closing in front of them. They knew they could not get through and into the forest. They started to fan out on the savanna. Their guns opened up, trying to hit the flying platform. Johnny dodged their misused vehicle about. It had no armor. It was really just a flat plate. There was even hardly anything to hold on to. Dunaldine flashed down with the battle plane. He must have been up there thousands of feet and out of sight. Gouts of flame and dirt began to pound around the three Basher tanks. Suddenly, the convoy in the ravine began to close up. Evidently thinking it was moving again, the three tanks swerved and raced back to the convoy tail, mindful of their duty to protect it. They stubbed right onto the trail. Then they too halted. They were trying to fire up at the ambush point. they could not elevate to reach the crest of the slope to their left. The other flying platform opened up. Blast mortar shells crashed into the cliff behind the last tank. The rocks and dirt flashed into the air. An avalanche roared down and closed the back door. The lead basher tried another charge at the rock slide, blocking their forward progress. Just at the instant its nose reared up, a mortar struck under it. The lead basher flew up, rolled over in a back somersault, and lay upside down in the road, helpless. Johnny drew a deep breath. He was just about to tell Donaldine to open up on a bullhorn and demand surrender, and was reaching for his Beltmine radio to do so, when their fortunes reversed.